Hello, this is Ilana Goldstein-Sachs of Web Yeshiva with this week's Rashi podcast for Parashat Vayikra. Visit www.webyeshiva.org for more information on our fully interactive online yeshiva. Parashat Vayikra begins the description of the korbanot, the sacrifices, as they're called in English, a detailed and often technical listing of what offerings should be brought, by which people, and for what reasons. It is the formulaic nature of these laws, you know, bring two bullocks and you'll be forgiven by the morning, which perhaps eventually led to the misguided understanding of how korbanot worked. A quick glance at what many of the Nevi'im had to say later on about the korbanot, you know, for example, Yeshayahu, Amos, Yirmiyahu, right? If you look in those books to see what they had to say about korbanot, one reveals that the people of their time viewed the korbanot as a sort of cure-all, right? You could oppress the poor, you could worship other gods, as long as you bring a korban to set it right. And so when you read what these Nevi'im have to say about korbanot, one could almost think that they're against korbanot, and indeed, you know, many modern-day interpretations have tried to claim that the prophets later on were against korbanot. But in fact, what they're really against was what the korbanot had become. Back to our parasha, in keeping with the technical nature of Parashat Vayikra, and in order to clarify all the technical laws that are listed in the parasha, Rashi delves into the minutiae of the do's and the don'ts of the korbanot. Peppered throughout these procedural details, which are found in this commentary, however, one finds hints to what Rashi was trying to explain as the real meaning of the korbanot. Reminders of how not to succumb to viewing the korbanot as mere obligations which needed to be fulfilled in order to divert God's wrath. Basically, how to avoid the eventual mistakes that were made that the Nevi'im Achronim railed against. So what I'd like to do now is to look at a few of these examples in Rashi's commentary on the korbanot, of where within these technical details of the korbanot he sees the meaning of the korbanot. One example of this can be found in Rashi's repeated comment throughout his commentary that when bringing a korban, it's the proper intention of the bringer of the korban and not the size of the offering that matters. Again, one can see how the nature of korbanot can mislead a person, right? Well, it is very easy to understand how people can get swept up into the idea of, well, the bigger my korban, the more Hashem will be happy with it, which could very easily then be transformed into, well, the bigger my korban, the more likely that Hashem will forgive me for whatever it is that I may have done wrong, which can then be transformed into, if I bring a really big korban, then it doesn't matter what I do because Hashem will certainly forgive me. Right, so Rashi is trying to rid the reader of the Torah as well as the bringer of the korban from this idea by commenting over and over again that size of korban does not matter. So for example, we see in the Rashi's comment on Vayikra Perek Aleph Pasuk Yud Zayin, and here Rashi is quoting, well, it's hard to say exactly which source he's quoting, but this appears in the Mishnah, the Midrash, the Gemara, right, all over the place. Ne'emar ba'of reach nichoach, it says regarding a sacrifice of a bird, reach nichoach, right, that it's a pleasing fragrance to Hashem. V'ne'emar b'behema reach nichoach, right, it also says this regarding an animal, right, that if you bring a larger animal, not a bird, but a cow, a sheep, and it also says reach nichoach, that this is a pleasing fragrance to Hashem. Now, it might be important to point out that the Midrashei Halakha on the idea of reach nichoach clarifies, right, that it's not that it's a pleasing fragrance to Hashem in the literal sense. It's not that Hashem is enjoying the korban the way that a human being would enjoy a korban, not by its smell, not by needing it for food, but rather they understand reach nichach, that Hashem is pleased with it. Right? It's a frilly way of saying that Hashem is pleased with it. Right? And specifically, they note Hashem is pleased with it because the korban is done the way that it should be, right? The way that Hashem prescribed. And so in that context, we can understand better the comment, ne'emar be'of reach nichach, ve'ne'emar be'behemar reach nichach. Right? Hashem is equally pleased, equally satisfied with a korban, whether one brings a bird or one brings a larger animal. Right, in the sources from which Rashi is drawing, they also bring the example of bringing grains, right? Another type of korban, right? There also it says reach nichach, right? So that's equally as good in the eyes of Hashem. Here I'm guessing that Rashi skips the grains because he's talking the pasuk that this Rashi is on is talking about the bird, right? So the kal vachomer, right? The lesson is learned simply by bringing in birds and larger animals, right? If a bird is as good as a cow, right? You don't really need the grain in that comment that Rashi is making. In all cases, right? Ne'emar ba'of reach nichach, ne'emar be'behima reach nichach. Lomar lecha echad hamarbe ve'echad hamamit. Right? This teaches us that it doesn't matter if you bring a lot or you bring a little, if you bring a large animal, if you bring a small animal, right? It's all the same, right? A lot and a little is all the same. The key is that the korban has to be brought with the proper intention, right? That the bringer should be bringing the korban with the intention of doing it for Hashem, Lashamayim. Rashi hints at the significance of proper motivation once again in his comment on the case of a korban brought by a leader of Am Yisrael. In Vayikra Perek Dalet, right, there is a listing of korbanot that are brought by different types of situations, different types of people. Right, the perek starts off, if the Kohen HaMashiach should transgress, right, what he has to do. What types of korbanot he has to bring. Right? The pasuk says, "Im haKohen haMashiach yicheta laAshmat haAm v'hikriv al chatao," etc., etc. Right? If he should transgress, this is what must be done. Then in pasuk Yud Gimel, a few pasukim later, "V'im kol adat Yisrael yishku v'ne'elam davar meinei haKahal." Right? If accidentally the entire congregation, all of Am Yisrael, do some sort of transgression, right? Such and such is what needs to be done. And then in Pasuk Kaf Bet it says, "Asher nasi yecheta va'asachat mikol mitzvot Hashem Elokav asher lo ta'asena v'shgaga v'ashem." This is what he must do, right? If the nasi, the leader, does a sin, he does something that he was not supposed to do, right? Such and such is what he has to do. On the words, "Asher Nasi yicheta, lashon ashrei." That Rashi is picking up on the fact that with the other cases, it's the pasuk starts with the word im hakohen hamashiach yicheta, and then again im kol adat Yisrael yishgu. Right, if this or that person or group should do something wrong, but here it says asher nasi yicheta, when the nasi does something wrong, transgresses. This interesting change in language perhaps points to the difficulty of being a nasi, in the sense that you're put into a situation where you're more likely to transgress. It's not an if, it's a when. Right? And Rashi's comment, as we'll see, answers to that, meaning goes along with that situation that a nasi can be in. Right? Lashon ashrei, right? Asher, when a nasi will sin, Rashi says, is milashon ashrei, right, which means, you know, fortunate or happy. Ashrei hador shehanasi shelo noten lev lahavi kapara al shkagato, kal vachomer shemitcharet al zedonotav. Fortunate is the generation whose leader is concerned to bring an atonement for his inadvertent transgression. All the more so that he regrets his intentional transgressions. leaders transgress, right? They make mistakes, they do things wrong, they take advantage of or fall victim to their position of power, and they do things that they shouldn't do, right? This seems almost to be a given, both by the Pasuk and by Rashi, right? Or the sources that Rashi is borrowing here. The mark of a good leader, Rashi is saying here, is the ability to say chatati, right? To say I did something wrong. So this particular pasuk, right, Rashi points out, it's talking about when a leader transgresses accidentally. Right? The pasuk says bishgaga, right, that he did something wrong accidentally. And even for that, he is concerned to bring a korban for his atonement, right? All the more so, right, that he should do so for his intentional transgressions. And that is the mark of a true leader, of a good leader. Ashrei hador shehanasi shelo noten lo lev lahavi kapara ashkagato kavachomer shemitcharet al zdonotav. This should be the sign that is required for posting on every governmental building. But the point here that I'm trying to make is that once again we see in Rashi that he kind of sticks in, again, using the Torah Shebaal Peh, right? These aren't ideas that he is coming up with on his own, but using the Torah Shebaal Peh, he's making it clear that together with all the details and the minutia of the laws of the Korbanot, that it's the intention, it's the sincere wish to right a wrong, and not the mere action of bringing the Korban, which makes all of the difference. Shabbat shalom u'mubarak.